This is Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. Let's get back to teacher pay now, specifically whether something like the Equity Project's higher teacher pay could happen here in Michigan. Joshua Cowan is an associate professor at the Education Policy Center. It's at Michigan State University. Joshua, we've just heard about this innovative charter middle school in New York City with starting salaries at $125,000. Could something like this happen in Michigan?
It's difficult to imagine right now, and not just in Michigan, but any of the states that are seriously thinking even through major financial reforms. And there are a number of reasons for this. The first is that to put this in place in a large scale, particularly a large scale district, is very difficult. It relies on a lot of sort of attention between the supervisors, buy-in by individual teachers. There's a scale problem. There's also the issue of considerable disagreement that still exists in sort of the proper way to reward teachers, whether it's strictly through compensation or some increase in professional opportunity. So it is difficult to imagine that type of thing being implemented in a state like Michigan, at least right now.
What are the thoughts of the education community looking at this model? Because that's what Zeke says. We are a model. We're trying to display something. They believe they're seeing results. What kind of conversation is this causing in the education community?
There's a lot of disagreement about these models, as you can imagine. There are sort of stakeholders that have invested a lot of time in sort of the way that historically teachers have been paid, which is in a fairly rigid way based on experience and education almost exclusively. But there is this recognition that a number of changes ultimately do have to be made, in part for reasons related to trends in other sectors. We know that the rewards for sort of being an effective professional are increasingly realized by these professionals, particularly for women who have traditionally made up the bulk of the teaching workforce and historically 40 or 50 years ago didn't have the labor market opportunities that they do now. The old model was based on this framework where you can be guaranteed a certain amount of money for what you do, for how long you've put in. The alternative right now, which is in most sectors where people sort of do receive compensation in part based on their performance, is attractive to people, particularly people who either self-identify or who have supervisors who identify them as highly effective with respect to their peers.
So looking at that, saying there are things that it would be good if it happened in remunerating teachers that match what the real world's doing.
That's right. The particular problem with teaching, though, is there's still a lot of disagreement over the criteria that we would use to implement this system, again, in a wide-scale way, because you have to find a way to have a system that's fair to the individual teachers, that's fair to the kids that are being taught by those teachers, that parents buy into, that school boards, which are elected, which is not a trivial point, buy into. In the education research community, again, where there's a lot of disagreement, but most people do think that some type of model like what you're describing is the wave of the future, but getting there is difficult when you're thinking about how it would be expanded to a large context because of the amount of person power that it takes. Once criteria for pay are even decided upon and agreed upon, which is a big if, it takes an extraordinary amount of principal and assistant principal and lead teacher effort to perform these types of sort of interactions, and they end up spending a lot of their time doing it, and they have other responsibilities too. So you have to kind of come up with a way to sort of build this model in a way where it works not only for an individual school but works for a 10,000 or 20,000 student district. That's the tricky part.
What about other approaches? What's being talked about, and what other approaches might we look at to just make the pay situation better for teachers?
A lot of this does get back to the issue of teacher tenure and the issue of sort of how teachers are evaluated. And the big critics of the current system point to the prominence of and the importance of experience in the teacher pay system. In some cases, would like to throw that all out entirely. And most people that are really trying to come up with a solution realize that that's not necessarily a realistic alternative either, in part because name me another profession that doesn't reward you in part based on how many years you've been in the field.
Sure.
But coming up with some sort of hybrid where experience is rewarded financially, you do accrue additional salary as you go through, but perhaps the standards that you have to pass to reach tenure, for example, become higher than they were in the past, so that when you did get to a point where teachers who are 9 and 10 years in, they are tenured, they possess a fair amount of job security, certainly relative to other professions, we sort of keep that aspect that draws good teachers into the field or has the potential to anyway. But at the same time, we can be sure that the tenure process has thoroughly winnowed out teachers who really maybe shouldn't have been in the field all along, and make sure that that process kind of sort of who comes out on the other end of it really wants to be there.
What do you think should or could happen at that really early stage when they're newly minted teachers, because we're seeing so many wash out before they're in the profession for very long? They're not hanging around to climb up that ladder and
That's
get
right.
seasoned.
some of this involves just very, very targeted, focused professional development from day one. And a lot of districts already do this, and a lot of states already require this. All states require professional development, but we're talking about a different type here, very, very targeted, very specific to the individual teachers. Mentoring processes, for example, that pair teachers with senior teachers from day one. Again, lots of districts do this. Not all districts do. And then, you know, and this is a bit more controversial right now, there's been a lot of attention increasingly by the federal government to how teachers are prepared by the teacher preparation programs, seeing what we can do in the pre-service side to improve the experiences and the skills that teachers already have by the time they get into that first year in the classroom rather than waiting to develop it over their first few years. We know in education that experience does lead to increased effectiveness over time. The first 5 years in particular, teachers, by almost any measure, become more effective. We know this. This isn't controversial.
Right.
It does tend to peter out after about that time. Part of what people are trying to figure out is that experience we first see, is it because teachers need time to grow and to kind of mature as a professional? People think that's part of it. Some people have suggested that some of this is that the learning curve is so steep right away because of perhaps inadequate preparation up front. I should say, by the way, the schools in Michigan tend to be considered fairly good on this preparation side. There have not been, as far as I'm aware of, any major critiques of what we do at Michigan State, for example, or the University of Michigan does here, or some of the other schools in the state. But just nationally, what's required for teachers, what they need to possess when they come in. Part of that is a debate between pedagogy, which is sort of how we teach, and our philosophy of teaching in the classroom, and then just our content knowledge. And this is really one of the big debates is can we make sure that teachers not only know how to teach but know what they're teaching as well. Those are all some of the first 2-3 year strategies, because as much professional development as we might want to give teachers over time, as much as many state laws and the salary schedules incentivize teachers to go get graduate degrees over time, most of those degrees are just sort of graduate degrees in education again, and aren't necessarily, you know, sort of a chemistry teacher going back and getting a master's in chemistry or a mathematics teacher going back and doing the same. These are some of the kind of tensions that people are weighing. Is sort of, we want to sort of incentivize more education, more development, but there's only so much time in a teacher's career to do this.
Back to the strategies for these new teachers, where could better pay fit into that?
There's sort of two options, right? One is we pay teachers more upfront. That has to come from somewhere. And the other—
And I can hear administrators clutching their pearls all over state right now because money's an issue.
It is an issue. In Michigan, 87 cents on the dollar already goes to instructional expenditures, already goes to teacher salaries and benefits. There's not much more of the pie we can divide up. It's a much more sort of, we need to sort of find extra money to come and do this. But it's not just on the salary side. There is a big debate right now among researchers on how much money really does incentivize teachers to both go into and stay in the profession. And the evidence is it doesn't seem to do much.
We even heard actually Ryan Silver, the teacher from TEP, say if the teacher comes for money, they're not going to make it.
And that seems to be the experience. Policymakers understand this, administrators understand this, and teachers understand this. And many of us go into careers for reasons other than the financial payoff. But this is where the evaluation side comes in. This is where what teachers are doing in the classroom comes in. Because one of the arguments against sort of the way things are done now is it's not so much that money itself matters, but it's money for what you're doing. I mean, there's evidence out of North Carolina, for example, that teachers in math and other hard-to-teach subjects who received very small bonuses not for their performance but for being teachers with those skills tended to be less likely to leave high-risk classrooms. It did incentivize them to stay in those schools. The teachers that got the bonus but weren't aware they were getting the bonus just because the policy didn't translate or whatever, there was no effect. And so the point of that is it was the reward, not the money. It was this recognition that you're doing something difficult, that your skills in math are different than your peers over here. We don't pay teachers differently based on what they teach. We are starting to pay teachers a little bit more if they're teaching in what's called a high-risk area. So that's changing a little bit. But these are the types of strategies. It's sort of, if you're a math teacher, we don't have as many math teachers. If you're a math teacher, and particularly in an environment where it's been difficult to get teachers to stay, we're going to pay you for those skills and that premium that we have because there aren't as many people doing what you're doing, frankly.
And I hear you say they feel valued.
And they feel valued when they do that. So I think the take-home point there is it's not all about the money. It's sort of the rewards for what you're doing that— Because of the world we live in, we often monetize.
Joshua Cowens, an associate professor at the Education Policy Center at Michigan State University. Thank you so much for talking with us.
It's my pleasure.